Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 10th, 2020, as we head into uncharted waters in the world. I'll be concentrating on a few details here regarding what's going on. This lawsuit is monumental that occurred just last night, actually, two nights ago, before Wednesday midnight, and this was the state of Texas being joined initially by eight other states, suing the states of, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Georgia for illegally extending the voting date from just November 3rd to beyond. And so, that the vote then has to go back to the state legislature, nullifying all of the votes in those states because they were basically contaminated with additional votes and the voting timeline. So anyway, that's going on. Everybody else is covering that, so I'm not going to say much about that other than it is a historical event. 2 days ago, actually 3 days ago now, the anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, which was a surprise attack, which, as we learn from history, really was not a surprise attack. It was well known, even if they did not know the date, it was well known that Japan was going to bring its massive navy up to Hawaii and make an attack. So that is history, but we're dealing with a very similar situation today. The fact that China has the world's biggest navy. Now, they didn't build that just to sit in harbor and give their soldiers something to do. That was built specifically to challenge the United States Navy. And they have technologies that are very advanced. There's the story of a Chinese submarine coming up right between a complete U.S. task force, naval task force, out in the middle of the ocean, and all of a sudden a Chinese submarine surfaces right between the ships and they cannot detect it on their radar. They can see it there, but they can't detect it, which means that the Chinese submarines were able to sneak up on this U.S. convoy undetected, something that's almost an impossibility, so they don't know how they did it. There's also the issue in outer space, where China has built and tested kinetic energy weapons. A kinetic energy weapon is simply a pile of junk, bolts, nuts, BBs, whatever you want, that come in at orbital velocity, which is very fast. But if you're coming in a retrograde orbit, coming around the other way around the Earth, you add those together, you have potentially 34,000 mile an hour, a little bolt will go right through a spacecraft or a satellite or a GPS satellite and just destroy it. It'll just blow it to pieces. So it's kind of a shotgun effect. And these are very cheap to make. They're very easy to launch. And in a matter of minutes could basically take out the GPS tracking systems that the U.S. military tremendously depends on. I've often said, in the U.S. military, you can't go take a pee without a GPS signal. And that's a little possibly overstatement, but it's really true. Everything has been built on GPS technology, so it's literally the Achilles heel. And if you've looked at great nations in history, even China, when the Mongols, China built the Great Wall because the Mongols kept coming across and, with border wars, etc. So the Chinese built the Great Wall. It took them, of course, ages to build it. And the idea was that they would have sentinels on the wall and they could quickly move troops to one place or another to fend off the Mongols who were constantly trying to breach the wall. But eventually the Mongols decided that, there's a way they could do this. And they literally invaded China in spite of the Great Wall of China, and ruled China from basically then on. The Mongols took over China. So whenever you have what you think is an invincible military shield, there's a way to get around it. And of course, the other way to get around it is to buy off the politicians in Washington. And so you have people like Biden and the Biden family and the Clintons and, you know, the whole laundry list of Republicans and Democrats in Congress that have been purchased and owned by the Chinese. So people think that Russia is a big threat. Russia has an economy that's smaller. It's not even in the top 10 in the world. It's way down there, and it's certainly not a rival economically or militarily or technologically. It could be militarily, and of course, the big three. It's interesting that China has a program. It has a program to defeat the United States in all of those areas, military, economics, and technology. So as with Pearl Harbor, I was on the John Moore show yesterday morning, and John expressed that there are aircraft carrier fleets off both the East Coast and the West Coast in the United States anticipating something, and the word is that something big is coming down. So and that's the big political effort right now, is to try and get Trump out of there. If you haven't seen this video, I suggest that you go watch Tucker Carlson's show on December 7th. I think that was last Monday night, the Tucker Carlson show, where he showed a University Economics professor from China expressing that up until Trump, they owned Washington. They owned everything that went on there, and they basically controlled it. When Trump came along, nobody had challenged them, so they had a big interest in buying into the Dominion voting machines, which they did on about a month before the November 3rd election. So China was controlling those machines to give Biden a win, because Biden is their man in Washington. He's sitting there for them. So anyway, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. As I say, other people are covering this, but I just want to make people aware of this if you are not aware of it. I also mentioned just quickly, I'll re-mention it here. I usually don't duplicate topics that I talk about on John Moore's show, but it's very important to understand that even the Trump administration has been completely misguided relative to foreign policy in especially Latin America, because we could have very good influence there, but because of the bad policy decisions that are very much against those countries, Central America and Latin America and Mexico are very much controlled by China. Okay, as we speak, they are talking about putting out the first doses of vaccine in the United States. And besides the mark of the beast, the imprinted tattoo that goes along with it that can be read along with a lot of other information digitally, etc., with a chip that's put in your hand, tremendous amount of invasion on people's privacy. The biggest issue, along with all of these other issues, which are huge, is that, number one, they're going to try and force everybody into this. Biden says if he gets into office, he will have 100 million vaccines within the first 100 days. That means one out of every three Americans would be basically forced to get a vaccine and then comply with all of the others. This is the beginning of the Great Debt Reset, which, by the way, is a book. This is not a conspiracy theory. But the one of the huge issues with the vaccine is that it changes your DNA. And so we're going to have a split population of humans. Are the children that come out of the people who have the vaccine, they will have a split DNA. It'll be different than people's DNA who were pre-vaccine. So you're going to have a situation where I believe that there will be a lot of birth defects. Not maybe in this generation where you have elderly people that say are not going to have children, but middle-aged people or children who are getting the vaccine, who then will have, they're going to have birth defects that'll come out in 10 or 20 or 30 years, or maybe second generation birth defects. That's where this is going to have its effect. There was a drug when I was little that they were giving to women, and it caused birth defects. And that was only discovered after tremendous number of women in the United States had taken this. And then they recognized it was due to this this drug that was given to a lot of women. Wow, it was horrific. And of course, the drug companies take no responsibility by law right now. They cannot be sued. They don't have to do any testing. There is literally no testing for the vaccine that's going together today. Certainly not by any testing standards that have ever existed before. And then the final thing is that the Nuremberg Convention prohibits specifically targeting human lots, groups of people, for experimentation. And this is experimentation. There's no question about it. There's nothing proven. There's no science behind this. There's no science behind vaccines at all of any kind. The lawsuit recently in Washington, where they demanded that the National Institute of Health, the CDC, and vaccine companies present the testing data that they have for the efficacy of vaccines, that is, whether they work or not, and then also the side effects, not only side effects of given vaccines, but the combination of giving two or three vaccines at the same time, up to 69 vaccinations for a child that's reaching the age of 18. They've had 69 vaccinations with no testing of any kind at all. And it's very clear that SIDS, the sudden infant death syndrome, has gone to zero since the COVID thing came in, because people are not taking their kids to the doctor to get vaccinated. And so anyway, the younger the babies are when they get vaccinated, of course, the more effect it has on their immune system and their nervous system. So anyway, we're going to be split. There's no question. A lot of people will be standing in line, rolling up their sleeve, or actually holding out their hand to get the vaccine. And the ink that is used is called Luciferia. That's the name of the ink that's going to be put into your hand. I mean, if you go back and read the Bible about the mark of the beast, that's where it is. It's on the forehead or the hand, and they realize that that's where the heat is, because the chip that's going to be implanted has to use the heat from the person that is a gradient of heat. In other words, it has to be at the surface, and it has to be a part of the body that generates a lot of heat and that is expelled from that. And that's a region of the right or left hand and in the forehead. And that's exactly what the Bible talks about, is that is where they will put the mark of the beast. Okay, so, I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure brought from all directions, from family members, from, you got to get the vaccine to cure the world. They're already talking about the fact that this vaccine will not work, and that significant percentages of the people that get this vaccine will have either other complications or it simply won't work. And so they're already talking about beyond the vaccination. You know, the news media is not talking about any of this. So people have this simplistic idea that you get the vaccine and all of a sudden the world is better. You can fly around, you can go to Acapulco again, everything's better, the kids go back to school. Gee, doggone it, isn't life going to be swell once you get the vaccine? Well, they're already talking about how the vaccine is going to be 43% effective. Well, they don't even know that. There's been no tests. You know, the side effects, the long-term genetic side effects of people having babies with altered genetics. You start playing with genetics, it's a complicated, complicated scenario. So to change one thing and not understand what all of the ramifications are, it would be like going out on your automobile and somebody that doesn't know anything about the automobile starts pulling plugs and unscrewing things and putting this over there and that over here. And then let's just add a few things over here. And, oh, doggone, that'll make the car better. No, you're dealing with a biological system here that's really, really complicated. Okay, and then in addition to this, you have a free spirit, which is essentially connected to your body. And that gives you something that's very different than animals. Very different than animals. The fact that you have creativity, this is your part of your spirit. This is part of your makeup, is the fact that you have a spirit living in your body, and that gives you the ability to interact with your body, and that gives you something like natural rights and morals. Those are the things. The dog on the street, if a dog is in heat, the male dog comes down the street, it doesn't have any morals. It's just following, it's reacting to its biological makeup. Humans are different. You can react to that. You can control that. You can say, okay, this is, you know, you're not an animal. You're not just responding to environmental, responses from a biological standpoint. You have control over your body. A lot of people don't. And that's what the atheistic science is all about. They take a kid into kindergarten, they show him the picture of the ape walking along, and then the next ape is standing up a little bit, and then finally you have man walking. And what does that tell a little kid? That tells the little kid that they're just an ape. They're evolved from an ape, just like all the rest of the kids next to them. They don't talk about the soul or the inner spirit or the creativity or the uniqueness. None of that. They use other words like diversity. And what do they talk about? Diversity of color. If you look at any university or, say, especially private schools or public schools, what is the top thing? If you go to their webpage, they have, oh, we're diverse. And what do they show you? They show you a Japanese and a Chinese and an Indian and a black and a Caucasian all sitting together happy. That's diversity to them, skin color, which is the least of all biological traits to classify people. If you want to classify people based on biological traits, skin color is the least of which you would classify people because of the many variations that are there. But then you also have the issue that all of these people have a spirit. They're individuals. So classifying them based on skin color is minimally. So they talk about racism. That's racism right there, because they're saying we're diverse based on the color. You know, look at this picture. We have people of all different skin colors here. So aren't we good? Oh, my goodness. Are these people floating out in outer space someplace mentally? Oh, my goodness. It has, you know, in the whole issue of racism, for the vast, vast majority of people, they don't live in a racist world. They don't think racist. And so somebody's putting that racist, they're playing the racist card to divide the public, and that's simply what it is. And there are people who are very racist against white people. They're racist against black people. They're racist against, you know, based on skin color. Okay, and that's, you're probably not going to cure that ever. There are going to be some people like that. I've taught in classrooms with every combination and variation in foreign countries, in the United States, etc. And, you know, I don't want to go into that too far, but the whole issue of taking a mass population and changing their genetic structure with a vaccine is insane. This is right out of a bad, you know, 1950s sci-fi movie. Okay. Quick note on some scientific issues here. Japan landed on an asteroid, and the material from that asteroid, the samplings, have been brought back to Earth. It landed successfully, and now they're going to take it back to be tested. I don't know what they're going to learn or what they think they're going to learn. Probably not a lot. If you look at the surface of an object, it tells you very little about what is down underneath. And you can take that from Earth, a sampling of Earth. If you go out and sample in the ocean and you go even 50 feet down, you're not going to tell very much about the Earth more than, say, a million years ago. So sampling the surface, that's a lot of, it's kind of nice to do that. They're probably going to find a lot of organic compounds that were built after the asteroid became the asteroid. It got blown out of some planet or star or who knows what the history of that particular object is. But sampling the surface rarely is going to tell you anything about the object. It's going to tell you about stuff that was floating out in space that landed on that object. Same with the comet nucleus. Okay, so they're not a great point in wasting any airtime talking about Japan's sampling of an asteroid or the U.S. And then, of course, they blow it up and project it to be the biggest thing in the world, like certain asteroids would be worth $20 trillion in resources. Well, sure, but it's going to be a very, very long time until people actually locate that particular asteroid. And, you know, this one sampling from an asteroid is simply surface material. It has really nothing to do with the asteroid at all. There is a lot of hype on two things going on in space. A lot of hype in the last days. In fact, December 21st, there is a visual alignment of Jupiter and Saturn to the point where they're going to look like one object. So that's a rarity. But it's a visual alignment. It has nothing to do with influences in the solar system. It has nothing to do with, say, gravitational effects, because we are literally gravitationless. We are weightless compared to any other object in the solar system, including the sun. The tides, you say, oh, well, no, there's tides. That's gravitational. Well, yeah, those are differential effects. That's because of the proximity of the moon to Earth and the fact that Earth has dimensions, and the near side of the Earth to the moon pulls harder than at the center of the Earth, and then the far side of the Earth, the moon influence on the oceans, is less, so that side bulges out. So you get a bulge on both sides of the Earth due to differential aspects of gravity. But if we were a point source and the moon were a point source, we would, as we move in our orbit, as we move around the sun, as we are affected by other planets, we are literally gravitationless. We are weightless. And so this visual alignment of Jupiter and Saturn is just that. It's a visual alignment. It's nice. It's like a pretty picture of a flower on the wall. It's a visual conjunction. And so the great conjunction makes it sound like something is lining up and something could actually happen. And that's simply not the case. It's just a visual alignment. Nothing more, nothing less. And then they throw in, oh, well, the moon will be passing by these at some point also. And so, okay, big deal. Nice looking in the sky. And the issue right now is so that they always try and make the Christmas star. And by the way, I have not heard, I think I've been possibly successful. We'll see. But I have not heard the hype this year of all of the astronomers coming out and telling you all of the baloney that they think the Christmas star and usually they'll say planetary alignments or something like this, some visual alignment, which only lasts a couple of days, which does not fit the description of the Christmas star at all. The Christmas star had a tail, so right there we're dealing with a comet. The Christmas star lasted for years. It was not a one-time, one-evening, here you got Saturn, Jupiter aligning. It was not something that lasted very long at all. The Christmas star lasted years. It was long enough for the three kings to pack their bags from three separate countries, go across the desert, which was not a fast ride in a Mercedes-Benz. It took months and months and months, and they discovered the star in the east, but they followed it to the west, and then it came to rest over the Bethlehem. Remember, they stopped at Herod's place on the way, and Herod was very interested because he wanted to know. He had already killed all the babies, the firstborn males, and to make sure that the new Messiah would not live. He had all the firstborn males in the country killed. So he was very, very interested that three kings show up at his place going, hey, well, there's this star up there. And the and Herod also, his astrologer saw those stars also, the star, the Christmas star, the Christmas comet, I call it. And so he was very interested. And so he told the three kings, he said, when you go and find them and you find the baby, come back and report back to me. And they were very suspicious, because here you got this high-powered Roman ruler that is very keen on knowing where this new baby king was being born. And so when the kings went back, they decided to go a different route, and they did not go tell Herod. So at any rate, there's a whole lot of history related to that. But the Christmas star, they have been bending over backwards for decades now trying to re-explain the Christmas star, and nothing they say, just like the Noah's flood. These scientists, these geologists go, oh, that was just a flood in the Mediterranean when a wall breached and the water flowed into the Mediterranean Sea. It was like, no, it was 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain worldwide, and it's reported worldwide. It was the Noah's flood, and the world was highly populated before that. But you see how they get the scientists to change history to support the garbage explanations coming out of the leaders of the world. And that goes on today. That's still going on today. But my point is that I'm surprised that, and I haven't been all over the internet, but I have not seen nobody sent anything in regarding the astronomers trying to soft shoe peddle some baloney story about the Christmas star. I have not seen that this year, and it's patently apparent every other year. It's in your face. It's everywhere. It's in, the public media. It's in science media. It's everywhere. And this year, I haven't seen it. So maybe they're just kind of doing the old soft shoe, in vaudeville, when the guy was not successful, he'd like tip his hat and go skipping off the side of the stage. Maybe they did that relative to their baloney story about the Christmas star, because all it did was expose them and make people more aware of the Christmas star and the reality of the Christmas star. That was very special. It was a comet, and it was a very special comet. And we see comets all the time also. There's 6 or 10 in the solar system at any given time. And then occasionally we have the big one like Hale-Bopp that had a companion. So that was unusual, but it wasn't so unusual that three kings would pack up their bags and follow it. It was something very, 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 very unusual about that comet. And it was something that was predicted, and it was something that was associated with the coming of the Messiah. Okay, so that's my little rant for this year on the Christmas star issue, and I'll keep my eyes open. If anybody sees an article out there about these Yahoo scientists, astronomers, trying to soft peddle some garbage story about the Christmas star, planetary alignment or whatever their garbage is, send it to me, please, so I can take a look. Okay, the second story that is being promoted is that the sun had a little flaring activity the other day, and that yesterday and today, this thing is supposed to have an effect on Earth. It's a little G flare. It's the G2, which is the lowest, absolute lowest class flare possible on the rating system, unless they rebuild the rating schedule like they did with the Richter scale. If they rebuild the rating scale for solar flares, they would have to build a new category to be less than G2. Anyway, it's a nothing burger, it's a nothing flare, but the question is, why are they promoting it? Why are they making a big deal out of something that's not a big deal? And the only reason I could think is because they've been doing this for a long time, and as I said, I don't know when, I thought that something would happen the day before the election, or a little bit before the election, and that did not happen. NASA didn't pull the false flag, solar flare, because I think the reason was they needed the voter turnout to be as it was so that they could cheat and elect Biden president. And so why would you throw a monkey wrench in something that you had already resolved in a different way? You have to save your rabbits in the hat for opportune times. And the big opportune time, the something that's going to be on a worldwide scale, will be to pull the electric grid and due to some kind of natural event. And as I've said before, the only natural event that's big enough to cover the whole world as an excuse would be a solar flare, not an asteroid hitting or not a earthquake or not even a local war or not even a nuclear war. It would have to be something major earth-wide. And the only thing that can cover that story is a solar flare. So anyway, but there again, they're just priming the pump of the public so that they are constantly being hit with this solar flare, solar flare, solar flare, even though it's nothing. A G2 flare is nothing. It's like, gee, the bread store sold bread today. Big story. Oh my goodness. They sold bread today at the bread store. That's the equivalent, you know, nature of the G2 flare story. It's nothing. It is a complete nothing burger. A quick note on SpaceX. Was it yesterday they tested their rocket? Or I think they canceled the firing of the rocket minutes before or seconds before the actual firing was to take place. But it's this big kind of Flash Gordon-looking rocket. And, okay, so they built a rocket. Okay, so they can launch a rocket. How does that mean that they're going to go to Mars in less than 2.5 years? And I went into this tirade last week, which you should listen to if you don't listen to all my shows. They're all archived on my webpage going back 20 years. But so they can build a rocket. Okay, big deal. They have not covered any of the other bases of how you going to get people to Mars, keep them sustained in the spacecraft on Mars, coming back, and with you know the all of the hardware working 2.5, 3, 4 years later, with no way to supply them, with no way to get a hold of them, because as I said, Earth going around, it's different than going to the moon. Going to the moon, the moon is going around us all the time. It's like a couple days away. Mars, once you get to Mars, Earth and Mars separate in the solar system. Earth goes faster, Mars goes slower, and it's going to be another 700 and some days until they line up again to where you can get stuff out to Mars or bring stuff back. So we're talking, you know, 2+ years of absolutely no communication. And if something happens, and if you take any mechanical machine and stress it to its limit, I mean, you got to take all your fuel there. You got to take all the food. You have to take all the medical supplies. You have to take all the oxygen. I mean, boys and girls, they don't know how to deal with space radiation. They don't have any protection. I mean, boys and girls, the people are just nuts. Nobody's going to Mars anytime soon. You know, because you can build a big rocket, that doesn't mean that anybody's going to Mars. And if they send people to Mars, their chances of coming back are... Oh, my goodness. Okay, I can't talk anymore about that. It just drives me crazy. Here's a story about Oxford Photovoltaic and a company called Meyer Burger out of Germany. That is building solar panels, and they claim to be 43% efficient. Now, the current solar panels are running around 19 to 22% efficient, but that's a theoretical maximum limit, mind you. So you see the hype, they're building these solar panels, and they have a manufacturing plant in Germany that will run 200 megawatts per year of solar panels. So 200 megawatts of solar panel. And so that would be the nameplate value given the 43% efficiency. And now, are they going to run at that when they get out in a hot environment, out in the desert or somebody's roof in California? Are they going to run at 43% efficiency? Well, no, but the bigger story is that when I did my energy analysis back in the mid-2000s, we're talking 2005 or so, and this was the basis of my book, McCanny Wing Energy World Energy Project, with addendum on the myth of alternative energy. What I did is I did a Gedanken experiment, so to speak, with solar panels. And I said, at that point, solar panels were pushing maybe 15% efficiency, where they converted 15% of the energy into electricity. And then, of course, that had to be converted and stored and then reconverted back to AC electricity, because solar is DC. And so the point was that they had to, there are losses. So the and this is around 2005. But the point is, I said to myself, let's do an experiment, a mental experiment here. In spite of all of the research and advancements, etc., let's just imagine that you could build a 100% efficient solar panel, and that it converted 100% of the light to energy, electrical energy. And so that means that it would completely absorb the light. No reflection would come off the panels. No kind of these would literally absorb all the light. And so they would convert that into electricity. And the question was, could this 100% efficient solar panel solve the world energy problem? And so the amount of energy worldwide is staggering. The amount of coal burned, the amount of nuclear primarily, and the amount of natural gas. They're kind of divided one-third, 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 approximately, as far as the world energy is concerned. And then you get to hydro. Hydro produces maybe a couple percent of the world energy. And so building a hydro plant is a big, major operation, but it's really a very clean energy once it gets going, because the water flows, it goes through this generator, generates electricity, and the water keeps going, goes in the river and goes away. And then it rains up above, and so you're really using energy from the thermal rain cycle of the earth as it evaporates water down in the oceans in the valley, brings it up to the mountains, drops there, comes back down the river and generates more electricity. Okay, so hydro is a very clean source of energy, but it's really expensive, and ecologically it's a real big disaster because it destroys so much land. But it's nice to have that nice big lake there too. But what if you took and made a 100% efficient solar panel? And besides, what if you had a 100% efficient battery? That was, and the other thing about the solar panel, say that you could sell it for a penny a piece. Now, Oxford and Meyer Burger are not talking about how much they're going to sell these solar panels for, but I bet you they're not going to be cheap. They're not going to compare with the solar panels that are being built today that cost about $2 a watt. That's about the going price for home systems. And then, of course, installation and batteries go on above that. We're just talking solar panels. Say you could build a 100% efficient solar panel, sell it for a penny, would that solve the world energy problem? And the answer is no. Because the big expense are the batteries, the storage, because sun is only out a few hours of the day. It rains, you have to store the energy for the rainy day scenario, and then use that stored energy when the sun is not shining or at night. The end result is that given a solar panel, whatever the output is, you're going to get about 20% of that over the course of a year. That is the industry standard. And the real people in the industry use 0.15, not 0.2, because of other conditions. There's other losses, etc. So what they say is if you put on a solar panel array and it's like 100 megawatts, let's say 100 megawatt solar panel array, you're going to get, or let me just use, so I don't have to switch units, I'll say 100 kilowatts of solar panels. And you'd go, gee, 100 kilowatts of power, that's a lot of power. Okay, so now you take that, multiply it by 0.2, you're only getting 20 kilowatts of power. Instead of 100 kilowatts of power, you're getting 20 kilowatts of power, and that is not much energy at all. Then you have to divide that 20 kilowatts over the space of 24 hours. So you divide that, and you're not even getting a kilowatt out of this 100 kilowatt package. Solar is terrible. It was never meant for industrial use, and it will never, 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 never solve the world energy problem. This factory is going to produce, they say, 200 megawatts per year. Okay, so multiply that by your 20%, and you're down to about 10 megawatts of power. You know, for the expense, you know, is it worth it, and what do they cost? Even if it cost a penny of a solar panel, it would still not solve any real problems. So the end result is this is just a lot of smoke and mirrors. Solar is not an energy source that's going to solve anything. The only energy source that is going to solve something is wind. Because it's there today, it was there yesterday, it's going to be renewed and be there tomorrow. And the other issue is to stop using energy. I've got a little video that's on my old webpage. It's a coal train. One time it was out, I think it was in like Wyoming. I'm driving through the plains, the beautiful state of Wyoming, wide open spaces. And I come up across a bridge, and as I'm coming across this bridge, the bridge swings sideways. There's no reason for a road to have a curve in it in Wyoming because it's flat. There's no reason to have a curve. But the road curves and goes over a bridge and then comes down the other side and continues back in the same direction. And the reason it turns is because it's going over a set of railroad tracks. There's two sets of railroad tracks, one coming and one going. So just when I happen to be there, there's a coal train. One's coming underneath the bridge, one's going the other direction. One's empty, one's full. So I get out my DVD camera and there's no traffic. So I just stop in the middle of the bridge. There's no traffic for as far as the eye can see, except for these trains. So I'm looking down the railroad track and I set up my DVD camera right on the bridge, and a perfect, perfect picture takes the whole coal train full as it's going off in the distance, and lo and behold, while I'm there, here comes an empty train coming back. So it's going back and forth, this coal train, which is, I didn't count the cars. You could in the video, and you could get a good estimate, but there might be, you know, hundreds, there's certainly hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of coal cars on this train, and then coming back the same, empty. And so if you took the efficiency of a coal-burning power plant, which is around, theoretically, around 30% because of the Carnot cycle, and then you take away all of the other inefficiencies, you get round down to maybe between 10 and 20%, somewhere in there. So that means, let's say that it's realistic, let's say it's 20%. We'll be really, really generous. So that means that 8 of the 10 cars that are full of coal, 8 of those cars, that coal is being burnt and goes right off into the atmosphere right now. And by the way, solar does that too, because solar panels produce a tremendous amount of heat. That 20% efficiency on a solar panel, 80% of that solar energy is going back off into the atmosphere as heat. And that heat also reduces the efficiency of the solar panel. Okay, but I digress. So with your coal cars, 8 of the 10 coal cars, when that's burned, it goes right up into the atmosphere and goes away. Only 2 cars, the coal is actually producing electricity that is being used by the end consumer. And so with the wing generator, I only have to produce as much heat, the equivalent of heat energy, as 2 train cars of coal compared to 10 if you're burning coal, simply because of the Carnot cycle. Because with wind, nature is providing you with that energy. And it's done because if you understand the rest of my work, my weather work and space science work, that wind energy comes from electrical currents that are coming from the sun as the earth itself discharges the solar capacitor. So these are tremendous, tremendous energy banks in outer space, which when the earth discharges the capacitor, it creates the jet streams, which drive the lower, the wind streams, etc., and the wind patterns that circle the earth. So that's generated every day because of huge amount of energy electrically coming out of the sun, and it's not due to solar light. Believe me, it has nothing to do with the light coming from the sun. If the sun's light were our only source of energy, we would have very bland weather. You would not have clouds. You would not have rain. You wouldn't have electricity. You wouldn't have lightning. You wouldn't have clouds. And you wouldn't have wind. None of the weather we have would come if it were not for the electrical conditions in the solar system. But don't ask your sleepy local weather guy that, or the hot chick they put on the Weather Channel so that everybody watches it. Oh my goodness, this world is so torqued. I can't believe it. Anyway, I digress again. But getting back to the idea of producing energy from the wind, it's there day and night from the North Pole to the South Pole. Whether it's raining or sunny, it doesn't matter. Wind is there all the time. It's the one source that is going to solve the world energy problem. But of course, you have the crooked General Electric and Siemens producing a three-bladed wind turbine that doesn't work and demanding government subsidies to pay them for a product that doesn't work. Okay, so at any rate, back to this Oxford photovoltaic coupled with Meyer Burger manufacturing plant. They had probably close to, I'd say, about $100 million investment coming from various sources to improve the manufacturing plant so it'll produce these, they're called tandem solar panels. That's the term they use because they have a crystalline material they put on top of the silicon solar panels to make them more efficient. And so they get a potentially doubling. Theoretically, they could double the efficiency of a solar panel, but like I said, I don't care. Multiply it by 5, multiply it by 10, do 200% efficiency, convert the solar energy, do a impossibility scientifically, convert 100% of the light into 200% electricity. You know, you couldn't do it, but just say you could. Still wouldn't solve the world energy problem because it's not going to. You still have to store that energy somewhere in batteries. That's inefficient. Then you have to convert that back to AC electricity, etc. It's just, no. You'd have to panel the whole planet to provide even a fraction of the energy needed for today's energy-hungry societies, economies. Okay, so I wanted to comment on that because it's very important. You know, people are still playing this idea that, you know, and they're playing on people that are very stupid people that don't know the reality of, you know, they don't even know what a solar panel will do. They don't know how a solar panel works. They don't know what it takes to recycle a solar panel or the ecological damage that recycling a solar panel will cause. These, you know, the bleeding heart liberal, we gotta, you know, save the planet from CO2, they don't know what they're talking about. Buying solar panels and three-blade wind turbines and populating the whole earth with these and at a cost of $10 to $20 trillion still won't solve the world energy problem. And so, you know, they're a bunch of idiots, people with kindergarten educations trying to solve PhD problems. That's about what it amounts to. Okay, so just a few last comments. We are heading into the final throes of this Christmas season, and I really don't advertise a lot. I have sales on my webpage for the terracotta water filters. These are taking the place of the stainless steel. There's a 5% off if you buy one, 10% off if you buy two, 15% off if you buy three. And then we will send, if you buy more than one product, if you would like, we will send them to different locations. The replacement elements are on sale. The wing generators and the multi-blade systems. I've been giving some offers of pretty good discounts to people who are on the verge of buying these systems. So the multi-blade systems, I just want to reiterate that the wing generators in the 10 kilowatt to 2 kilowatt range, from 2 kilowatts to 10 kilowatts, are pretty pricey per unit of energy. Once you get above that, there's nothing that'll even touch them, the wing generator. But what happens is I was turning down a lot of people who really could use a home grade, not industrial grade like the wing, but a home grade wind energy system, and then have a small backup generator, probably an LP, 10 kilowatt or 5 kilowatt generator, and some batteries, and have a decent off-grid energy system, and for not too big a price tag, because energy is expensive. I want to reiterate that there's been a somewhat of a myth, and it's unfortunate it's been propagated to the public, the idea of kickbacks from the government through tax incentives or, whatever, that somehow you can spend a few thousand dollars, throw a couple solar panels on your roof, and it's going to power your house. I saw one poor guy, he was in California, and the electricity went out, and he goes, I got my solar panels, and he had bought a Tesla Powerwall, and it didn't last. Excuse me, it didn't last through the night. And so he's going, well, doggone, I paid all this money. And, he had a significant investment, probably $20,000 to $30,000, into a system that didn't provide him any energy at all. And he was then scratching his head, realizing that he had been sold a bill of goods. He had been sold the Brooklyn Bridge. And, and the salesman will not tell you. When people come to me for the wing generator, the multi-blade systems, I will sit down and tell them what it'll do and what it won't do, and be very specific. It'll run your load for this much time. It won't run your load above this amount of power. If you run it over a certain amount of time, this is going to, you'll have to use your backup generator. And, how big a LP tank or diesel tank do you need to run for a certain amount of time? I will tell them that. And so but most salesmen of solar panels or something else will not tell you the real story. And they're trying to make a sale. They want you to get those solar panels on the roof. Elon Musk with his solar Sun City or whatever, they'll come out and put them on your house for free. And then you start paying them a monthly fee. But guess what? They get the government kickback. And after they get that, they probably installed it out there for free. And then you start paying them money every month. And if you ever want to take this thing out and you realize, hey, this is not paying for itself, it's costing me more money than I'm saving, then you got to pay them to come out and take it off your house for the installation and the deinstallation of this stuff off your house, and leave a bunch of holes in your roof. So anyway, it's not a good deal. And once again, solar is not going to solve anything. But my point is that people have gotten this false idea that home energy is cheap. You just, a couple thousand bucks, couple solar panels, hey, you're offline. No, you're not offline at all. So energy actually costs money, and you pay for, what you get. If you go to the industrial level of wing generator, it's going to cost some money, but I'll sell you a system that'll get you off the grid, and I'll tell you how much energy you can get, etc. And hopefully you live in a good wind area where there's significant wind, and because we don't sell wind. That's one thing I tell people. We sell wind generation, electrical generation equipment, but we don't sell the wind. You have to have that. And there are some places that simply don't have wind. There are other places that have really good wind, and they can make use of these. The reason the small multi-blade systems work okay is because they spin very fast. They have the blades, if you imagine the wind coming through, the blades follow the previous blade cutting through the air very fast. But the blades are aligned almost perpendicular with the direction of rotation. So there's many, many inefficiencies in the multi-blade systems, but they're less expensive. And so I have the 2, 3, 5, and 10 kilowatt multi-blade systems. And then also the grow towers. People are purchasing the grow towers. Those are popular. They allow you to have vegetables, etc., at your house. So anyway, the wing and the multi-blade system and the grow towers are never on sale. The water filters, my education package, and my books are on sale, and they would make very nice Christmas presents. And so, anyway, those are on sale for this Christmas season and give you an alternative to buy for your loved ones. And we'll send that to wherever you want them sent to. Here's another story about rocket engines. NASA is testing its mega rocket. This is one that it hopes to build, building a rocket that's bigger, allegedly, than the Saturn V moon rocket, which used five big rockets, the F-1s, that were used for the moon shot. And so these are bigger, more powerful engines. But I just want to note that the Russians built a series of engines, and these are engines they designed in the 1960s. So what's Russia's application? How does Russia solve the heavy lift rocket problem? They put lots and lots of smaller rocket engines into a bigger rocket. And the beauty of that is that once they develop these rockets, they're very stable. They're very reliable. They don't have failures. And if one ever fails, it's one out of a bunch. If you have five rocket engines on your rocket and one of them fails, you got a major league problem. That rocket ain't going nowhere. If you have one rocket engine fail and there's 15 of them, then that is, or 19 or whatever, then your rocket is going to still go into orbit. It might not be as high in orbit, but typically they're very much overpowered. Okay, so anyway, I'm about out of time here. Just want to remind you of my webpage, jmccsci.com. It's an upgraded webpage. Go there, check it out, very easily managed from a clickable point of view, all of the topics at the top. So once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.